Well, good morning, everyone. I hope that we find you well wherever we're finding you, whether that's in your home, if you are at someone else's, whether we're on your phone, on your computer, or your TV screen. We're going to adjust things just a little here. But I want you to know that the church isn't closed, just our buildings. Just because we aren't meeting together physically doesn't mean that we can't meet together spiritually. This is one of the wonders of our day and age that we have the technology to be able to do this. And I want to remind you that we are not a building. We're a body. And right now we are gathering together. Thank you for joining us this morning. And we might not be coming to church, but we can still be the church. And that's really challenging in today's day and age. Because, I mean, think about this. How, when everything is broken down, when everything is not going the way we think it should be, when we are forced into social distancing, how in the world can we be the church? I want to encourage you this morning to change your world. And this is not a big thing. This is not something that's impossible. Because we can look at situations like this and go, how in the world can we live out our Christian faith? How can we be the church? Or maybe you're on the outside looking in and you're wondering, what are these Christians going to do now? I mean, these are the people that are supposed to be getting together every week. And you want to see how it is that we respond. And I want you to understand, for all of us, it is not to sit back and be passive with us. This is a great opportunity. This is a great moment in the history, not only of the United States, the history of the church, where we can step up. Every generation has had this moment, whether it was World War I, World War II, the Great Depression, the Recession, some sort of plague that has gone through, whether the whole globe or just a country, where Christianity and each generation has had this opportunity to change their world. And we're going to do it by remembering what our identity is. And we find that in Matthew chapter 5. If you've got a Bible, go ahead and open with it. You've got a couple minutes to get there before we actually get in. We're going to be in Matthew chapter 5. The text is going to be right here over my shoulder. And if that's that's where we're going to be this morning. So Matthew chapter 5, this is a passage known as the Sermon on the Mount. This is Jesus speaking to his followers. And he says in verse 13, he says, "You are the salt of the earth. But if salt has lost its taste, how shall its saltiness be restored? It's no longer good for anything except for to be thrown out and trampled under people's feet. You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a stand, and it gives light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven." So look back at what he says there at the very beginning. You are the salt of the earth. What in the world is Jesus talking about being salt and light? And sometimes we can be pretty salty, especially in these times. And some of us are a little lightheaded, but I'm pretty sure that's not what Jesus is talking about. I think he is talking about something that goes down to the root of our identity as Jesus followers. There were many uses for salt, and in fact, so many uses that it actually was extremely valuable in the ancient world, so much so that some Roman soldiers were actually paid in salt because it was a universal currency. And that's actually where we get our term salary, by the way, from the Latin word salarium. But it was so many uses that leads many people to have a little bit of a confusion here over what Jesus is talking about. What does he mean? You are the salt of the earth. The first use of salt was preservation. Salt was really, really good at keeping food safe. It not only was a desiccant, pulling the liquid out of foods, it was also really good at killing germs and bacteria and preserved meat from decay. And maybe that's what Jesus is talking about as far as his followers being a means of preserving the world around them from moral decay as we live according to God's ways. Let's be honest. One of the biggest forces for good in this world has been Christianity. Yes, there have been some heinous things done in the name of Christ, but most orphanages, hospitals, universities, those things that we look to as great agencies were started by Christians. That preservation But preservation wasn't the only trait of salt that was popular at the time. It's also extremely important for nutritional value. We put it on our food, not just because it tastes good, because our body needs it. It gives us electrolytes that helps us to regulate blood pressure, our respiration, even some brain activity. I mean, think about soccer players or football players or runners or athletes at all. There's a reason they guzzle Gatorade during their competitions. It's because they need electrolytes, and salt is one of those electrolytes that is essential for bodily functions. And it's very possible Jesus was saying, my followers, you are going to provide what is essential for the development of the kingdom. You are going to provide those spiritual nutrients for the kingdom to be able to do what it is meant to do. But on top of that, salt also was a fertilizer. In certain soils, you would use salt so that the crops could flourish. And it's entirely possible that Jesus is saying, my followers, you are going to provide what is necessary for the kingdom of God to flourish. Jesus could have meant any one of the above, but I'm pretty sure he meant all of the above. Because he goes on, remember, to talk about if salt loses its saltiness. Well, if salt lost any one of these properties, any one of these characteristics, it would be useless. It would no longer be salt as it is. It would be worth nothing. I'm pretty sure Jesus is talking about all of these. Now, Jesus is saying that we are designed to have an impact in our world, that God has formed us for the purpose of impacting the world around us in a beneficial way. And I'm not just talking about the general benefit of the world around us. Very specifically for his kingdom, that we are to have a beneficial impact, kingdom impact in the world around us because we follow Jesus. But then he says something that's kind of strange here. He says, how shall its saltiness be restored if salt has lost its taste, if it's lost its saltiness? Sometimes in the ancient world, salt was impure. They would get it from an admixture of rocks. Often it was sea salt, and that would have been mixed with gypsum, which looks very similar to salt. So what would happen is over time, the salt would leach out of these things, and you would be left with something that looks like salt, that at one time tasted like salt, but now it doesn't taste like it, and it doesn't preserve like it, and it doesn't have the nutritional value of it, and it doesn't fertilize like it, and it doesn't do anything that salt should have done. Salt should have had. What you have is no longer salt. What you have is an imposter. What you have is something that looks like salt, but it really isn't. And there's a saying in the Talmud, which is the Jewish commentary on the Old Testament. It was the basis of most of their laws, where there's a quotation attributed to Rabbi Joshua ben Hananiah, where he says, he's asked, you know, if salt loses its saltiness, how can you make it salty again? Pretty much this exact question. And he says, well, you simply make it salty again with the afterbirth of a mule. Well, then he's asked, do mules give birth now since they're sterile? He said, can salt lose its saltiness? The whole point is that it's impossible. If we, who are the salt of the earth, lose what makes us characteristic, it proves that we were never really that salt of the earth that Jesus calls us here. Genuine salt can never lose its flavor. If it ever loses its identifying traits that make it distinct from sand or sugar, it's not salt. It's an imposter. Yeah, anybody who has made the mistake of grabbing the wrong white, grainy thing in the cupboard when you're trying to make pancakes has learned this mistake. There's a difference between pancakes and crackers, and that's whether you have salt or sugar. We found that out early in our marriage, and you could definitely taste the distinctness of the salt as opposed to sugar. It hasn't lost its saltiness. It kept its traits. And that is what Jesus is talking about. It is going to be different. If the salt has truly lost its saltiness, it shows that it wasn't genuine to begin with. The same is true of Christianity. If Christianity, if we lose our Christ-likeness, even in moments of crisis, it shows that we really weren't Christian to begin with. We were just really good at looking like it, tasting like it. And we might have had a little bit of the morality of it. We never got the relationship of it. So the world looks at that and says, this is useless. This isn't making a difference. This isn't doing what it was supposed to be. For the kingdom's sake, for Jesus' sake, for the church's sake, for the world's sake. These people, as Jesus puts it bluntly here, is useless. The response to the imposter disciples is rejection and honestly despising from the very people for whom they were supposed to have value and make a difference in their world, to change their world. So the world turns on them for their arrogant hypocrisy. And the challenge is for us to examine ourselves and say, have we experienced the change? Have we experienced being different from the world? And at times like these, this is a real test of it. Because the world outside of Christ, those far from Christ, so if that's you today, there are two things that you're told to pursue: health and wealth. You know, get a lot of money. And make sure you're healthy, because if you don't have your health, what have you got? Well, and it might even be for good things. It might even be so that you can take care of your family, so that you can be selfless, so you can help your company, so that you can help your community. Those are altruistic good things. But Christians, if the rest of the world is pursuing health and wealth, when we give that sort of message in a crisis like this, where not only is our health on the line, our economic wealth is also at risk, how are we different if we are telling people no greater hope than come to Jesus, because he'll make you healthy and he'll make you wealthy? Folks, that's the farthest thing from the truth. Yes, there is great spiritual wealth, and there is no better place than to be with Christ. But Christians, we need to be very careful that we are distinct from the world, that we are distinct in the right ways, in the message. What are we pursuing? And in moments like this, that's when that is clearly revealed. Then he draws another parallel, this time using the image of light. He says, you are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. Throughout the Bible, light is a symbol that expresses the removal of darkness, revealing God's plan for history or theological clarity. The force of light, good and wisdom, and the forces of darkness, evil and ignorance, are constantly shown as being in tension throughout the Bible. And Jesus is calling us to recognize the contrast between who we are and who we were, who the rest of the world is before Christ. Because Jesus says of himself, I am the light of the world. He says that he has come into the world as a light that enlightens all people, so that those believing in him will no longer be in darkness. That's what John says in his book called the Gospel of John, where he accounts the life of Jesus. Get this, the same Jesus that says that he is the light of the world now says to his followers, you are the light of the world. How can that be? We're not God in the flesh. We're not going to die for people's sins. How are we the light of the world? Well, to put it simply, it's because everything that we do reflects him. Every bit of light in us came from him to begin with. Everything that we do right now is shining the light of Christ to those around us that are watching for him, those that are living in the darkness. That is predominantly what he is saying here. She talks about the city being set on a hill. It can't be hidden. It's supposed to shine out. It is supposed to come out of a place where we don't just hide it. And he doesn't just say that they carry the light. He doesn't just say that they show some of the evidence of the light of God's kingdom. He doesn't even say that they carry the message of the light of God's kingdom. He says, you are the light of God's kingdom. So get this. You're not just carrying the evidence of God's kingdom. You are the evidence of God's kingdom. As a Christian, as a Jesus follower, you are God's kingdom. So that means that everywhere you walk, everywhere you sleep, everywhere you sweat, everywhere you work, everywhere you live, breathe, and die is sovereign soil, because you are the kingdom of God. That's pretty awesome. You are the light of that kingdom, the evidence, the advancement of God's kingdom. Everything you do is as an ambassador of the kingdom of light. Look at how he describes it in the following verses. He says, nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a stand, and it gives light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. I want you to get something. If nothing else from today, the people of God shine brightest in the darkest of times. That's why we have such a great opportunity right now to show the difference that God makes in our lives, that Christ has made because of what he did for us. He died for us, took our penalty, and now he has promised us eternity. What do we have to worry about? What do we have to panic over? It's in the gloomy days when the fragility and vulnerability of life is looming over people's heads that we have the once in a generation opportunity to show the hope that lies beyond those gloomy clouds of despair that are hanging over their heads. We can be a beacon of hope, and hope is most needed and most precious and most desired when it is the hardest to find. Folks, we have found it in Christ. Christians, we need to be out there giving that hope, social distancing, but at the same time, we'll talk about how in a little bit. Then he goes on to say, in the same way, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. We live in such a way as to impact the world around us that they look at us and they don't see us. They don't just see our good works, because folks, let's be honest. Jesus says, apart from me, you can do nothing. So any good that we do didn't come from us. It's not because we're great people. It's because we have a great God and a great Savior who has done great things for us that we could do anything good at all. So we, whenever we shine the light, we are actually shining the spotlight on God, from whom the light came from in the first place. Christian, that is what we need to be doing right now. In the middle of the crisis, we show the cross. That is what we do. And these two pictures give us two traits that we're going to go through real quickly about who we are, especially in moments like these. The first, you are distinct. You are distinct. God made you to stand out. He made you to be different. Salt and light are naturally different from the world that they impact. It's the unique traits of salt that make it so valuable and useful. And light doesn't get overwhelmed by or mixed with darkness. Wherever the light goes, darkness becomes illumination. It is pressed out if you view them as two separate forces. God made us to be distinct in the same way. He says, in the same way, let your light so shine. He is calling us to be as distinct as light and darkness, as salt and any other substance. This section immediately follows the scene where Jesus is walking along the beach. He sees some fishermen. He says, follow me, and I will make you fishers of men. He is saying to his followers, this is what those who follow me are going to live like. They are going to have an impact on their neighbors, on their coworkers, on their children, on everybody that they cross paths with, because they are fishers of men, which just means they are seeking after men to bring them to the hope of Jesus Christ and the cross. Look, church is good, and I mean normal church services. Retreats are good. Conferences are good. They prepare us, they encourage us, they guide us, they give us information. But most of life is not lived out in church services or conferences or retreats. Most of your life is lived out in the normal, everyday experiences and challenges of life. Disciples of Christ, the followers of Christ, who are salt and light, are called to be intentional sojourners in this world. You're not going to be salt and light just by being able to come to church. You're going to be salt and light right where you are, because it's part of who you are as a follower of Jesus Christ. See, intentional sojourning in this world requires that we understand who we are and what we are that makes us different from the world. Before calling these people salt and light, Jesus spoke to them about this very thing, showing them that they are distinct. He does this if we back up to the very beginning of this chapter. we will see what we know as the Beatitudes, where Jesus starts to describe what his kingdom is like. And listen to this, and listen to how counterintuitive, how countercultural, how distinct this is. Starting in verse 1, he says, "Seeing the crowds, he went up on the mountain. And when he sat down, his disciples came to him. And he opened his mouth and taught them, saying, 'Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when others revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven. For so they persecuted the prophets who were before you.'" What Jesus says here emphasizes the revolutionary distinctness that is made in the lives of the character of Jesus' followers. Being salt and light in the world requires us to be alert to the stark difference between our calling and our values and that of everyone else. We are called to live out the values of God's kingdom. And in the face of a crisis like the coronavirus, or the economic recession, or even the normal challenges of daily life, our greatest impact is not going to come from the sermons that we preach. It's not going to come from evangelism meetings. And it's not going to come from conferences or retreats, not even on short-term mission trips. Being salt and light is most effective in changing our world in the ordinary experiences of life, because making little differences in little moments has a huge impact over time. Everyday activities show the world around us the distinct nature of our transformed lives and cause them to look beyond us. So they don't see us. They recognize this person's imperfect, but there's something behind them. Lets them see God the Father. Everyday people are bound up in a world that has no hope, that has no peace, that has no way out. They're tormented by the things they do and plagued by a guilty conscience. They cheat to climb the corporate ladder. They lie when they really don't even have a motive to. They steal without remorse. They don't mean to be like this. But they have no cure for the curse of sin. The problem with us is us. And unless something outside of us changes that, we have no hope of change. In our everyday interaction with everyday people, they find something they don't see every day. Jesus. Something distinct. In everything you do, you are an agent of the redemption of the world, part of what Jesus is doing in bringing the world back to himself. You are one of the blessed that Jesus talks about here. So, how can we respond to a crisis in a way that shows the difference God and Christ make? How can we respond to coronavirus in a way that is distinct? Well, where others have fear, we have faith. Where others are in a panic, we have peace. And we have these because we know God is in control and he's working things together for good. Where others are losing their minds, we respond with love. Because we're not just looking out for number one. We're also going to be taking care of those in our community around us. And where people are acting in compulsion, going out and buying 4 crate loads of toilet paper, we're acting in compassion, taking what we have and sharing it with those around us that are in need, even if it's to our own hurt. And where others are helpless and they're caught up in this sense of despair, we have hope and destiny. Because God has a plan for all of this, and he is working it together for something that he calls good. It doesn't make sense to me how it's good. It doesn't make sense to the normal human mind how it is good, but he's the one defining good. And time and again, he has proven himself faithful to that promise. And where most people are now jaded, we respond with joy. It's really hard as a parent whose kids are not in school right now to respond with joy. But it's because of what now we can do. And now what God is doing in our life and the character building that he's working into us as we're going through this together, that we can respond with joy to one another. You are distinct. But beyond being distinct, these pictures also tell us that you are destined. Get this. Salt is no good in the shaker, and light is no good with a lid. See, inside this little glass bottle, this salt, not worth anything. It is doing nothing other than being a decoration piece. But as soon as you shake it out and you put it on your food, it's flavoring things. As soon as you rub it on that slab of steak, it's preserving it. It is doing what salt does best when it is out of its container. And light is no good with a lid. So take this light. I can turn it on, but if I put a lid on it, what difference is it making? What is it showing? What impact is it having? Absolutely nothing. But if I turn it on, and even I don't shine it in your face, you can tell this is a light. It is different. And in dark places, like here on the screen, it shines even brighter in contrast to what's behind it. Salt's no good in the shaker. Light is no good with a lid. Salt isn't meant to be kept in the shaker, and light isn't meant to be hidden. It is meant to go out and impact the world around it, to bring its distinct characteristics to bear on everything it touches. We all want the world to be different, don't we? Even before the coronavirus, it was the election. Before the election, it was one other thing that we just wanted the world to be different. And on and on and on that chain goes, where we wanted the world to be distinct from what we see. We wanted to be different. And we are hungry for a world that is far different from what we have. Let me ask you something. What if God has designed you to be part of the force he uses to change the world? What if that's God's purpose for you? That is his destiny for you, to get out and make a difference, to be distinct, and to change the world that you interact with. And look, here's the amazing thing, because that sounds like a big, big job, changing the world. Well, the good news is you don't have to change the world, just you're part of it. If we all change a little part of the world will in effect be changed if we do our part as the followers of Jesus Christ. Social distancing is an opportunity for this. Now we have the opportunity to respond, to interact with people that normally we might not have the opportunity to. Your next door neighbors are prime examples. Just being able to get out and just love on them, do whatever you can to help them. We'll talk about some ideas for that, but it starts within our own home. It starts within our own heart. An unknown ancient monk is quoted as saying, "When I was a young man, I wanted to change the world. I found it was difficult to change the world, so I tried to change my nation. When I found I couldn't change the nation, I began to focus on my town. I couldn't change the town, and as an older man, I tried to change my family. Now, as an old man, I realize the only thing I can change is myself. And suddenly I realize that if long ago I had changed myself, I could have made an impact on my family. My family and I could have made an impact on our town. Their impact would have changed the nation, and I could indeed have changed the world." You don't have to change the world, just your small part of it. It starts with you. We can't control the crisis, but we can control what we do with the crisis. God has us going through the panic of the coronavirus and the shutdown for a reason. He wants to use us in this crisis to change our world. Now, this is risky, but we're called to faith, not fear. Use some common sense. Wash your hands frequently and keep your social distancing. Please obey the governing authorities. But look for opportunities to serve. God has you where he has you for a reason. That's not a mistake. It's not an accident. It's not a crisis to him. It's all part of his plan. Pray for your neighborhood. Ask God for divine appointments to meet with people that need something that you have, whether it's a material supply or the good news of Jesus Christ or even just your company, your presence. Open your home It's neighborhood kids. So the parents that need to go to work, that are still working, have a place for them. And the kids can get a break. Or even the parents that don't need to go to work can get some fresh air and some free time. Offer to tutor some kids in the neighborhood if you can, if that's something God has given you as a skill. Offer to pick up groceries for someone in your neighborhood. Make sure to sanitize everything, but look for ways to meet some needs in the people around you. God didn't put you there to quarantine you from them. He put you there with them on purpose to make an impact, to be distinct, to be different. Offer to share some of your extra supplies. Maybe you're one of those people that did get 10 tons of toilet paper. If that's you, spread the rolls around. Make it something available to your neighborhood. Offer to go out shopping for the whole block if you can. Do something for those that God has put around you. God has the people around you for a reason. It's not on accident. God doesn't have you meeting with the people you meet with on a weekly basis on accident. He doesn't have you interacting with people in what seem like a coincidence, even those people that it might seem to be an inconvenience. That's not an accident either. It's part of his purpose. People are not obstacles to be overcome. They are souls that we are put here to seek after and show his love to. God put them there. That means your neighbor across the street, your next door neighbor, God knew that this day would come. Just like Esther, perhaps you were put there for such a day as this, for such a time as this, that God could use you. If you haven't yet, get to know your neighbor's names. Pray over them. Go prayer walking in the neighborhood. Ask for them to give you prayer requests, because if nothing else, that is something that we can do from a distance, and there is nothing more powerful than prayer. Have them over for dinner if you can. You've already shared your germs. You're living right next to each other. Of course, keep 6 feet apart if you have a nice long table. Ask them to spend some time outdoors. Speak across the fence if you must. Be outside intentionally to see and be seen by your neighbors and interact with them just to keep the social interaction, because at times like these, we can get so lonely, so distanced from each other. We don't have to be. Interact with as much as you can. Maybe offer to clean and disinfect somebody's home that's not up to it. Use whatever resources you can. And God has given you resources and skills you have for a reason. Do you have a green thumb? Go do some yard work for somebody in your neighborhood. Are you handy with a hammer and a saw? Jump in on your neighbor's project that's been left undone because the construction companies had to close down and the contractors can't do it anymore. Jump in and be some sort of help. Use whatever skill, whatever resource you have to change your world, because it's part of what God has designed you to be as salt and light. It's one of the traits that God has given you. As we close, just be looking for opportunities in these moments. I don't think God has this by an accident. This is completely on purpose. I'm excited to see what God does with it, what God does through it. I lament the loss that we are going through because of it. My hope and prayer is that God uses you and me in ways we could have never imagined, and that he changes the world through us. Would you pray with me wherever you are? Just bow your head. God, would you use this crisis? Would you use us in this crisis? Show us how to be the salt and light you have called us to be in new ways. Give us the courage to do what we can to show our love to our neighbors. Thank you for this opportunity to serve and care for those in our lives in a fresh new way. Give us wisdom as we seek out how to do it best in our unique contexts. May people sense you in us and the difference you make. Be with the elderly in our community, those at risk, those with health concerns already. Lord, preserve them from this. Be with our governing authorities as they make hard decisions every day that are going to impact us for generations. Lord, give them wisdom, give them comfort. I pray that we as a people would support them. Lord, be with the young and the strong. Give them wisdom. Keep them from inadvertently spreading this disease to those who are at risk. I pray that you would be with the missionaries that are around the globe, with people all over the world that are suffering from this. God, I pray that your love would pour through them, keep them safe and protected. Be with our medical professionals, doctors, nurses. Keep them from this. Keep them from spreading it to their children. Lord, I pray for nurses especially that are without masks right now. God, would you protect them in the face of this? For the doctors and the medical scientists that are trying to understand this disease and trying to get ahead of it and try to stop it, Lord, I pray that you would give them the ability to communicate clearly and quickly, that they would be listened to, that we would be attentive to them, that we would follow their directives. Lord, for our country, for our brothers and sisters around the world, we just pray for your blessing. A lot of us are panicked. A lot of us are unsettled. A lot of us are uncomfortable. Would you give us peace? Would you allow us to be different in the midst of all of this? We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen. Thank you again for joining us. We will be live streaming same time next week, or you can come to Drive-In Church, 2308 Adams Avenue, Tyrone, Pennsylvania, and I hope to see you there. Until then, Christians, let your light so shine before men that they see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. I would say at this point, you are sent out in peace. I guess we will sign off in peace.